Lisa is on 9:10 a.m. and she'll be talking shortly.
I guess those are the microphones. They just smashed it in her face.
Aunt Roz is here.
Of course, you're at Aunt Roz's house.
Yes.
You mean you're here?
Yeah, I'm here, yes.
They put their headsets on, their headsets off. Thank you so much for staying tuned to 9:10 a.m.
Superstation, the voice of Detroit. I'm Karen Dumas, and this is The Pulse. You know, we are in our gift and giving, and I think the power of reading is the biggest gift of all. And joining us in the studio is author Lisa Rose. She has an amazing story, and that story and her experience is shaping some even more amazing stories that you're writing. Personal story, written story. Mm-hmm. Help me, Lisa. How are you doing?
Good. Hi. Hi.
How are you?
I am good.
Good. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So tell me, you know, I read your background. I was intrigued. Give me a little bit about your experience. You were once a teacher in Highland Park. You know, it's evolved into writing some novels. Start from the middle. We don't go to the beginning. We'll start in the middle.
Okay. Well, yes, I was a teacher in Highland Park in Pontiac. And it really kind of inspired me to write again. I always wanted to write. And my mother actually says, do something that you make money at. So I became a teacher and became really, really rich.
Of course, all teachers do. Isn't that why people teach?
Right, right. And I really was having trouble finding books that really described my children's lives.
Because these were predominantly African-American students. And so, you know, you've said that it wasn't that they did not want to read, but they couldn't relate to the stories that they were being given to read.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Many of them lived in shelters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the books that are out there do not describe their lives.
And so do you think from a teacher's perspective that, you know, that can be a contributor to the high literacy rate that we have that comes out of urban areas because they were not able to relate to the materials that they're given?
I think so. I think a lot of it is, and I think we evaluate literacy in a much different way. And I think that a lot of kids in the African American community are able to have a lot of functional literacy where they can read signs mm-hmm. and maps and go about and do things. The kids in the suburbs don't have the same opportunities. I mean, they are very functional literate, but they don't perform well on the test to right. demonstrate it.
Okay.
And I think sometimes it's how we measure our children, and we're not taking those things into account.
Okay, we're talking with author Lisa Rose. She was a teacher in the city of Highland Park and in Pontiac, and she got an insight that many of us never do. And that written some stories, one of which that we're going to talk about in a little while. Shmulek.
Yeah.
Okay, you gotta get my Jewish going. I'm getting here
because
it's Shalom. Not I was so intrigued with the shizzle. But Shmulek paints the town. Let's talk about what that story is about.
That is actually about a painter who is asked to create a mural for Israeli Independence Day.
Okay.
And he's just a big slacker.
For lack of a better word.
Yeah, he just doesn't know what to paint. And then his little dog, Ezra.
With the orange glasses?
With the orange glasses.
Okay.
He decides that he's going to paint. So he's the one that paints the entire mural. And at the end of the story, he figures out that it's his dog. So
he's still a bigger slacker than we anticipated if he gets his dog to do the mural.
Correct.
Huh. So what's the story behind all this? I mean, does the town still get painted? Does the mural still get painted?
Yes, everything gets painted.
Okay.
And what's nice about it is that the kids are in on the joke. So as the story goes along, they see how the dog is painting everything for Shmulek. And Shmulek's just clueless. And then at the end, it's the most wonderful mural the town has ever seen. And the mayor thanks him. And Shmulek says, it wasn't
You're
me.
You're welcome.
It wasn't me. It was my dog.
So tell me what part of your story helped to shape Shmulek's story.
Not too much personal.
Okay.
I mean, because I'm actually like a type A person. I probably would have had it done.
I would have never known that.
Done like 3 weeks ago before the deadline.
Okay.
But I think it's just a fun story. You know, there's a lot of stories that I write, especially the stories that are based in my teaching experiences that have a lot of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
When other things can just be fun.
Okay, so this is your first published book, but you have written other stories.
This is my first published book in print.
In print, okay.
I have ebooks out, mm-hmm. which is now part of Curious World, which is Houghton Mifflin's program. And then
which is a big educational source for almost everything in schools.
Yeah, well, actually, it was for a smaller company. Things get shuffled around and
absorbed.
Yes, and authors just go with it.
But I want to talk a little bit about, you know, because you mentioned in the information here about The Snowy Day, which was one of the most celebrated books because it was the first to feature an African-American main character. For anybody that's read that book, it's a beautiful story, but it was written by a Jewish man. So let's talk about how that's shaping who you are as a Jewish woman, positioning yourself to be able to write stories about and for African-American children?
Well, I think sometimes, you know, you don't pick things. Things pick you. And then you realize, you know, after reflection, that you were training your whole life for that very moment. And so that's how I, you know, when you say, well, how did I wind up in Highland Park?
Yeah, that's a good thing. Because a lot of times, again, if you're teaching, as you said, you know, your mom said, make a lot of money. Okay, well, teaching isn't that option, and you know that. Teachers, we just talked to two representatives of our Detroit Police Department. There's certain professions that people don't do because it pays well or that you're going to retire rich. You do it because you're committed and because of the impact that you can make on the lives that you're able to touch. And so I can only assume that that's why.
Oh, yeah.
You never told your mom you weren't making $1 million a year, I assume.
No. She was a teacher, so she knew.
So she knew. Okay.
She knew. There was no plan with her. She knew. So, no, I really did. I wanted to make a difference. I wasn't getting hired mm-hmm. in the suburbs, and I said, they're hiring. And actually, true story, the day I was hired, a tornado hit the city.
So I remember that.
So I joke that it was a disaster from the start. So
no, they were just letting you know you're coming in, you know, and you're coming in and to pay attention to you. But I really would like, because we talk a lot about exposure and perceptions. And sometimes only when we're in the same circle or in the same space do we really get to see things about others that we otherwise either assume or would never be aware of. Let's talk a little bit about your experiences as a teacher in those two areas.
Definitely. I think that
for better or worse, Lisa.
Oh, I mean, yeah, please. Yeah. No, I think that we do live very divided, and especially in our city, in our Metro Detroit area. And I had a lot of knowledge, and went to Michigan. Go Blue.
I'll forgive you for that. That's okay. You be quiet too, Ariel.
And I'll never forget mm-hmm. Sitting before my class and really not being able to tell one black boy from another.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most frightening and awful truth. I was ignorant. And after learning and just being there, I couldn't even imagine how I would think that they would ever look alike.
Well, because and I appreciate your honesty and your candidness. I mean, because you've never either had or been forced to take the opportunity to see each person as an individual. You know, a lot of times we see other groups collectively, you know, the Asians, the Mexicans, the blacks, the whites, the Jewish community. I mean, it happens. And unless something puts you in a position to actually take a minute and say, wow, that's Robert, that's James, that's Lisa, to see them for who they are and not for what society tells you that they are.
And it's very different studying it, reading about it, until you're there, wiping the tears, feeding the mouths, mm-hmm. buying the toilet paper for the tushies. I mean, you don't know.
And so how did that shape you, Lisa, and how did you come away as a better person?
I think it gave me a worldview very, very different that I would not have had. And I think that, you know, I look at the world and the problems and the divisions, and I can see the similarities, you know, that we're all people. And to see the pain, and to see the just let go of your judgments. Because that, I have seen the greatest dignity, the greatest generosity, you know, for people who have so little. And it takes such courage for a lot of the women to bring their kids to school every day.
It's a commitment. It's a commitment that's sometimes trivialized. We are talking with author Lisa Rose. She has written Shmuvalik Paints the Town. Interesting story, you know, it's make a great Christmas gift for anybody, because having a story of an artist whose dog ultimately paints the mural that he's been retained to paint or hired or commissioned to paint proves to be an interesting story for children and adults alike. But Lisa also has an interesting story of her own, having been a teacher in the city of Highland Park and Pontiac as a Jewish woman, and the perspective and the lessons that she's learned. Lisa, how are you going to take these experiences and put those into your next stories?
Well, I've been writing a lot of stories, and actually I've been having a lot of challenges with authenticity and saying that because I am this color and because of mm-hmm. who I am, that I am not qualified to tell those stories.
Really? Now, who's giving you this pushback? We're gonna have to call them. You know, we're gonna have to get our guys on this one. But I mean, why? Because as we talked about the Snowy Day, mm-hmm. Which was the first to feature an African American main character, and it was written by a Jewish man. Why can't you?
I would like to know the same thing, but I think editors are playing it very, very safe. You know, this world is filled with a lot of controversy and a lot of uncertainty. And I think that...
But isn't learning universal?
I would think so.
I mean, because you may have more experience, I mean, just a different perspective than many people part of that community. I mean...
I think that I would like...
So do we need to start a petition, Lisa? Do we need to get a protest going? What do we need to do?
Say I'm available.
but maybe it's not the published version of an author, and that will come. I mean, but you do have ebooks. Are any of those ebooks telling those stories that you want to tell?
They're not necessarily telling the stories that I would like to tell, but I do think that my most recent project mm-hmm. with Amazon Rapids really does meet the needs of that community.
Because okay, let's talk about that project.
I was invited to submit mm-hmm. some stories, and what I really love about it is that the stories are told almost like text messages. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of like, ha-ha, I'm really reading. But what's nice is that it's in very small bunches of print. And I think for kids who are kind of timid to reading or just don't enjoy it as much or are overwhelmed, it's very manageable. Mm-hmm. And I think it really meets the needs of those high-risk learners.
So what stories are you telling in that? It's not microblogging. It's called something micro-something fiction. I forgot. It is actually called something because there are a couple books there, and I don't remember what it is. But what stories are you telling as part of the Amazon Rapids project?
Well, there is one called Worm versus Early Bird.
Okay.
And it's it's a story about a worm and an early bird, and the early bird wants to
get the worm.
Get the worm. And another one is a kind of another play on the lion and the mouse story with Venus, a fly trap. And a bee. And then another one, and I'm very multicultural, it's called The Best Christmas Tree Ever.
Okay.
And it's told from the Christmas tree's point of view, and that's actually not released yet on the on the app.
The asset of any good author, any good consultant, any good creative is to be able to see things from a perspective that's different than their own. So I see value in somebody being able to be sensitive to and aware of a perspective and an experience different than their own, as you're doing. So I'm trying to figure out what the problem is. Why aren't they giving you a book deal, Lisa, so you can start telling all these stories? What book have you not written that you want to write?
Ooh, tough question. I actually want to write like the Juna B. Jones, which is an early reader series for urban children, because I think that there is really, it's very, very whitewashed, and there are very problems that I just feel like these kids kind of like, yeah, really? You know?
Like they can't realize. Well, you know, and they have the issue with that with the ACT and the SAT. Like, okay, they're asking questions that a lot of, not all, of urban kids don't identify with, and that inhibited their ability to do well on the test. So why hasn't anybody else written these stories? If they need to be told, or are we just as a community or a society so accustomed to just getting, you know, the milquetoast version of every story?
I'm asking the same questions.
I thought you had the answer, Lisa.
I don't have the answer. I think, too, it's because the editors and the people at, I mean, it's a systemic issue, haven't sat, as I did, in front of 25 kids in Highland Park. And Pontiac.
And you saw and you came away a better person. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Lisa Rose. She's an author, and she's author of Shmulik Paints the Town, a cool story, makes an ideal Christmas present. But we're talking about her experience and how this is going to shape her literary career going forward, and telling the story of being in the city of Highland Park, teaching in Highland Park, teaching in Pontiac, and seeing a demographic that she had never been exposed to, and seeing that there's a void there in terms of having the type of reading material that these young people need in order to encourage, validate, and sustain their interest in and learn and love of reading. So when are you going to start this series?
Oh, I would love to start tomorrow.
We got to put it out there. See, if we say then we can't say. You know, Lisa Rose back in December 2016 was on Karen's show and said she was going to write this book, and we haven't heard anything from her. So
she's going to call me.
We got to make sure. So we're going to follow you now and make sure that you do. What do you need in order to make that series a reality? I mean, outside of an editor's approval, I mean, certainly you've got digital platforms now and alternative means of creating and distributing content. So maybe you need to bypass them and create your own platform.
I have been thinking more about that because it's definitely been very frustrating, you know, when you feel that you have a need for a community of readers and you're kind of restrained.
Yeah, and that's not good. It almost makes it, like you said, it's systemic. So it's like, okay, you know, you're not a conspiracy theorist, but okay, but why don't they want this to happen?
Well, I mean, I have to say that with the We Need Diverse Books movement that was started in the publishing community, we really have made lots of great strides. But I think it's with books that are for older children. And my argument is, if we don't have the books for the younger kids, you're not going to get the older readers. And I always felt like when I was teaching, it was life or death reading. Like, I felt if the kid did not read by the end of my class, and I taught first grade, their chances of, you know, being shot in the street and being, you know, horrible things were that much greater.
Well, and certainly it contributes to their the likelihood of them not being successful. I've always said that you have to read, write, and speak well. I don't care what you do. I don't care what you don't do. If you cannot do those three things, then you're going to always be held back in some capacity. So, you know, whether they succumb to the streets, or whether they decide to do something that people may or society may look upon as menial, or whether they are successful, they have to be able to do those three things. It's a conversation and it's a challenge that has to start as early as possible.
Yes. Yes, and that's what I stressed. I said every day, I said, you know, where we're going, and they would say, go blue, which you don't like.
That's okay. I'll let you get away with it. But let me ask you this. How did your students respond to you? I mean, after you warmed up to them and, you know, you started to get to know them for them, how did they respond? You know, certainly your commitment to teaching them something.
Well, what was very interesting is I was defined as white. Mm-hmm. And my whole life, I was defined myself as Jewish. I grew up in the shadow of the Holocaust with my grandparents barely surviving, many members of my family being slaughtered. So I never kind of put myself in that privileged category. So that was really interesting. I really had to examine race, religion, and how to define myself. I feel that once you show someone that you care about their kids and they don't care what color you are.
Yeah, they don't.
You know, and once you sit down with families, and I'm just really like, look, this is our situation now, and we have to help your kid. And once they realize that, that trust is built.
And you find, you know, we talked to Ramonia Chapman from Gift of Life earlier, and we were talking about organ donation. You know, you got to think we can all use each other's organs. So the basis of who we are is the same. And once people find out that, yeah, we all want our kids to be, you know, taken care of and in good health, you know, we want to live a pretty happy life and, you know, maybe take a trip every now and then. But, you know, for the most part, we all want the same things. And once you get past that veil, and people do, we look at each other and we describe it, you know, it's a black woman, it's a white guy. It's a, you know, and move past that, things tend to be a little bit different and better.
Mm-hmm. Love doesn't have a color.
That's what I heard. Sounds like the title of a next book to me, Lisa.
Well, so, you're keeping me busy.
I am going to keep you busy. But how can people not only get a copy of Shmulik Paints the Town, but to stay in touch and keep you on the right path to this book series that you're going to do, and that Love Doesn't Know Color? I like that title. Sounds like a nice children's book to me.
Thank you. Well, the book is available on Amazon.
Okay.
It's also available through the publisher of Carben Publishing.
Okay.
And then as far as me, LisaRoseWrites.me.
Okay. Well, that's how we're going to keep in touch with you. Is there also a link to purchase this book or any of your other ebooks?
Yes, there is. Okay. There's links to especially the Amazon Rapids as well.
All right. Well, Lisa, you know, I appreciate, one, your being here, your candid discussion. I mean, I'm all for just raw conversation that brings us to a better understanding. And I think that you're the perfect person to continue to lead that discussion and write that next book so we can get to more common ground, especially as it relates to our young people. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm not going to wish you a Merry Christmas, but yeah, I am going to wish you.
You can wish me Happy Hanukkah.
I'm going to hit you a Happy Hanukkah, a Happy Kwanzaa, a Merry Christmas. I'm going to give you everything.
That's good.
There you go.
I like to celebrate everything.
Well, good. Lisa Rose, author of Shmulik Paints the Town, former teacher in the city of Highland Park. She's got a story to tell. Check her out at LisaRoseWrites.me. And we're going to stay in touch. We're going to see how those next stories come about. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Karen Cage. She's the CEO of RealComp. We keep talking about the real estate landscape in the city of Detroit. We'll find out how that's done when The Pulse returns. That's too much talk.
Yay! Yay. Now I've got to figure out how to stop it.